so dangerous, he fights the law, but he also fights the crime, but not as much dangerous-esque. With Ronaldo at his side, he'll have Ronaldo at his side, dangerous-esque. He's got some Chinese stars, and he keeps them under the bed with a length of pipe, dangerous-esque. That guy is dangerous. The mighty oak has fallen. If movies have taught me anything, he'll get the girl.
Okay, enough.
Stick it to the man, stick it to the man. Cool glasses, cool glasses. Stick it to the man, stick it to the man. He works alone, except when he works with Ronaldo, which is all the time dangerous-esque. He's a private eye, a crooked cop, secret agent, and a celebrity pharmacist, dangerous-esque. That guy is dangerous, 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 dangerous. Or did I?
You know, I always love it when somebody recognizes that it's Strong Bad.
How could you not recognize it as Strong Bad?
Well, for those people that have never been to HomestarRunner.com.
That's true.
I suppose. Living under a rock, in other words. So, here we are. It is the 13th of August.
Yes, it is.
Is this year going by really fast for you?
Yeah. It's gone.
It's just insane. I don't know what to say.
I should have done stuff that I didn't done, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff I shouldn't have done that I did.
I do that every day.
Yeah. So, but here we are. This is Warning Radio, and this is exciting. What's new? Is there anything new?
Probably.
We are free from National Geographic. We've had a gag order for a while.
Because they're dumb.
Yes. Television people are retarded. That's the only thing you can really say. And Stu is missing the Maiden concert. Why are you missing the Maiden concert,
we
Stu?
We are all missing it, Stu.
Well, that's what he says. Yeah. We're all missing it. But I'm just wondering why Stu is missing
it. My wallet said no.
Well, yeah. That's pretty much my situation as well. The wallet says you ain't going. But there is Extreme Turbo Smash tomorrow night.
That's true.
And that one's $5. So that's a little more doable.
Still kind of out of hand, but...
Well, yeah.
I have a reason for that, too. Actually, I bought this a long time ago. But Stu's not in the loop with this, but he needs to check it out.
Oh, yeah. This was the thing that Stu needed to see that you were going to buy.
How's that?
That's pretty cool.
Is that cool?
That's pretty cool.
The official Ozzy Osbourne Ouija board. I had to get it.
Oh, Stu, you're missing out. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Ozzy had those special made for the last tour they did.
Uh-huh.
And only people that bought the like VIP pass got one. So.
Yes, Stu, you are right. The TV people are all lizard people.
Unfortunately... These are redneck lizard people.
Yes. Yes, they are. Have you seen the one about towing or whatever?
Lizard lick towing.
Yes, lizard lick towing. That's brilliant.
Hillbilly hand fishing.
That's the big one.
The gypsies.
Yep, they want hillbilly hand fishing. That's what they want to entertain the peoples. Oh,
no
man.
More science, but people.
How
no
many
more
people?
Science.
Yeah, how many people have seen Chasing UFOs?
Three.
Because that show is the reason that there will be no more science on National Geographic. No more nature, no more science, none of that stuff. Because that show tanked so hard, it showed them that they need real reality TV, real scripted, good, redneck, blue-collar reality TV.
Yep.
So.
So if you have any stock in Nat Geo Television, sell it now.
Please do. Yeah, they're going to lose a lot of money, and then they're going to come crawling back for us to save them, because that's what always happens.
And we're going to say, probably not.
Probably not, yeah. But we've got some other undisclosed companies that are now happy that we're free and want to talk to us.
We have our fingers in other pies as well. So.
Yes. Yes.
And I was getting frustrated enough. I can tell people. I was going Baxter and saying, let's run away.
Yes, I agree. No, it was getting too much. National Geographic was getting flushed down the toilet. You know, what we need all of the kind of the skeptical community to come together and write to National Geographic and tell them that the kind of show that they want to see is it real?
Yep.
That's the kind of show that needs to be on there. Nat Geo is half owned by Fox as well. So it's a bad thing.
Yeah. They're only Nat Geo by name, not by anything else.
Yeah, not by blood. So, Dumbass, you're right. Is It Real was a great show, and you can still see it. I believe you can still see
it. It's on Netflix.
On Netflix.
Did you see the pictures I posted today?
I did not.
I'll just show you one.
That's a very nice picture. Where'd you get that picture?
I took it.
Where'd you take it?
The zoo.
The zoo. Okay. You didn't go to work today?
No, I went Sunday.
Ah, gotcha. On the Lord's Day, you went to work.
You got it.
All right.
But whatever. I photographed little Dracula, so.
That's a really cool shot.
Isn't he fun?
But that's a really good picture. Did you cut it out or anything? Or
no.
He's just hanging up against a white wall?
He's just hanging up against a white wall.
Wow. You don't often see bats do that.
And they were asleep, and I had to wake them up.
Ah. Well, definitely go to Netflix to see Is It Real?
Is It Real?
Great. That's a great thing to do. The creator of that show, just so all of you know, and all of you need to get your little pencil writing hands ready, the creator of that show is about ready to get the axe from Nat Geo because they think that they no longer want any kind of paranormal, any kind of UFO, any kind of science, no skepticism. They don't want any of that anymore. And that's what she does. And they're getting rid of Axer. So write and say that that's what you want. Let people know. What do you got for us this week, Brian?
Well, I actually have a few things.
Okay.
They're small, but I got a few things. Breaking news.
All right.
Stan Romanek has vanished off of Facebook.
Wow. Someone was picking on him.
His fan page and his personal page.
Well, you remember he did have a stalker that was picking on him, that was stealing stuff from us.
That wasn't that wasn't us. Yeah, the guy that was.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. Yep. So yeah, that's kind of bizarre. I did have a really creepy, weird thing happen today. I was outside work.
That's weird.
With a bunch of my coworkers, and there were all these, and by all these I mean a lot of birds wandering around.
Uh huh.
And everybody's like, what's with all the birds? And I said, wouldn't it be really creepy if it was like Hitchcock's birthday and they were celebrating?
Ooh, yeah.
Guess what?
It's Hitchcock's birthday. That's pretty creepy.
I really freaked out some coworkers.
Very nicely done.
We have a quick Frank Says.
All right, Frank Says.
And I quote, okay, I'm done. History 2 is trying to connect zombies and E.T. I'm only watching the cartoon channel from now on.
Wow.
In a way, I agree.
Right.
But he needs to stay away from the cartoon channels.
I think he does. You're right. You're absolutely right.
And a fun one here. This was wonderful. Florida man who lost his hand is charged with feeding an alligator. Is that great? It bites off his hand, and because they told him to quit going and playing with the alligators, they charged him with feeding an alligator.
That's funny. That's really funny.
See, I had a quick one here. It was bulimic woman gets knife stuck in throat.
Was she trying to gag herself with a knife?
And she, quote, inserted a table knife down her throat to prove she had no gag reflex and ended up in an Atlanta emergency room instead. Are you ready for the punchline?
Oh, God.
The woman's husband said this isn't the first time that she's done this.
Oh, Jesus.
Is that beautiful? Okay.
That's ridiculous.
Okay, I've got one other one, and it's because of an upcoming movie. The Apparition. Have you heard about this?
I have not.
I'll read you the official bio of it.
Okay.
Because it's based on a true story, but it also...
Now, is that a true story?
Well, ish.
Ish, okay.
But I had a trivia question for you about what it was based off of, but also a concept I had about it too here.
Okay.
Let's see. The Apparition, coming out on August 24th. When frightening events start to occur in their home, a young couple, Kelly and
Carrot
Ben,
Top.
Yeah, discover that they are being haunted by a presence that was accidentally conjured during a university parapsychology experiment. So we know that one. The horrifying apparition feeds on their fear and torments them no matter where they run to. Their last hope is an expert in the supernatural, but even that help may already be too late to save themselves from this terrifying force.
Okay.
What was the name of that experiment?
Conjuring Philip?
Philip, thank you. I could not remember that.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that's what we were talking about. Yeah, Conjuring Philip. Now... So I see the ish because Philip didn't hang around.
Exactly. Philip was a mind experiment.
Yeah. Philip was a artificial ghost.
Right.
Basically what happened is this, it was the university, well, it was a Toronto. I just don't know if it's the University of Toronto or whatever it was. It was a college in Toronto.
Yeah.
What they did is they wrote the life story of this fake ghost, how he lived, what he liked, what he didn't like, and how he died. And then they would sit around and they would meditate on Philip and think about him and try to make him real. And then they started doing seances in the form of table tipping. And that's when Philip sort of showed up.
Exactly.
Now, he would act exactly the way they sort of programmed him to. He would... when they were doing table tipping and stuff, he would, if someone was smoking at the table, he would tip the ashtray into their laps.
Yep.
Because he did not like smoking. There was all kinds of different things like that. But when their experiment was over, the experiment was over. And
well,
Philip disappeared.
But they've got an interesting tagline with this that I think pulls in with, let's say, things we've had to deal with recently.
Right.
Is the once you believe...
Right.
Of course, it's once you believe, you die. But think about think about what we've had to deal with lately.
Right, right.
It's not that there's anything there. It's that they believe it now.
Right.
And
now once you believe you're being anally raped by a demon.
You do.
You're going to be anally raped by a demon. There's no way around it.
Or you can
it.
At least convince the rest of your family.
Right, right. And once the rest of your family is convinced... then that also becomes a problem of its own.
Exactly. So once you believe you die, maybe not, but once you believe it's impossible to get talked down back out. Yeah.
And they need to realize that meth is not an escapism thing.
It isn't?
No, it's not. It's imprisoning. It's not escaping.
Oh.
So I think they're giving themselves extra problems by thinking they're going to protect themselves from the demon with methamphetamines.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting that this movie's coming out just in time for me to look at it and go, oh.
Yeah.
Based on a true story-ish, but it's that whole belief thing. They believe in it, so it's real. It's like,
right.
Well, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. Wow. All right. No, look, you guys in the chat room, you weren't there, okay? It was a demon.
It was a
demon? You weren't there. You don't know.
Oh.
What?
And speaking of that case.
Yes.
Guess who's posted part two of the video?
Rick.
Yep.
Our buddy Rick. Okay. For any of you that don't know, Rick. Rick. Now, this is not the Rick that's in the chat room. Different Rick. Yes. We, for lack of a better word, we kind of punked him.
I don't think that's really lack of a better word. I think that's pretty much an accurate statement.
We experimented on him. We researched on him.
We performed human experimentation. But it's okay because we're not doctors.
Exactly. Exactly. So we'll say we weren't practicing.
That's true.
So the thing is Rick thinks that we're really smart for some reason, and he keeps bringing us weird cases, and this is one of them. So the demon raping case. The thing is he wasn't supposed to be using any of his investigation up there for his little fake TV show, and yet he continues to do so. He just released part two of it, so. Right on, whatever. He can do that, I guess. So, I have a problem. We have a guest that wants to be on the show and everything, but he never okayed my connection request on Skype.
Really?
Yeah.
Don't you have his phone number?
No, I don't have his phone number.
Really?
I have the other guy's phone number.
Is he online?
No, I don't see him online. No, I don't know. So I can try. I can try and see what happens. Call phone. No, that's added a number. I don't want to add a number. Come on. Come on. Do call. Let's see what happens. Let's see.
Oh, I recognize that bald head.
Yeah, well, it's ringing anyway.
Hello?
Ooh, it's a real voice.
Vibraphone.
Hey. Vibes to you, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Excellent.
Everybody, if you don't know, this is George Harab. Is it Harab?
And
I always say Harab.
That's perfect, actually.
If you do, it still is, really.
Harab. I was going to write an intro song for you.
You know, really? He deserves it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because you did a lot of intro song writing for,
yes,
like, stuff. And I was going to write an intro song for you, and I was trying to figure out a way to work the word or the name Bob into it so I could rhyme it. But
yes, or Weaving Bob, maybe, or yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, but anyway, we're very glad to have you on the show. We really appreciate it.
Nice to be here. Are we on? Is this the thing?
Oh,
this is the thing.
This
awesome.
Is the thing.
Okay, cool.
We don't waste any time.
No, that's good. That's good.
Did
I like
catch
it.
Catch you at a bad time?
No, it's perfect, actually.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes. Excellent. We have just finished up a 9-day music festival in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which is where I live.
That was that tent revival thing that you were doing, right?
Essentially, yeah. In essence, I mean, it's sort of the equivalent of that. Yeah, it's 9 days. It's 7 stages, like 500 acts, all pretty much free. And I live smack dab in the center of it. We finished last night at about 1 a.m. So I'm just riding the crest now as we wash off all the funk from the streets of Bethlehem here, so it's a perfect time. Like yesterday, we would have been fighting against all of the motorcycles parked out in front, but today's perfect.
Wow, very nice.
Yeah, yes. I've seen a bunch of pictures and jealous that I couldn't make it.
It's a fun time. It's really. I was fortunate enough that I got to play 3 times as well.
Yeah, it looked like a lot of fun. We were watching the photos.
Oh, good. Yeah, the Facebook is a nice. Facebook has this nice way of making one realize what you're missing.
Yes, it does.
Sort of in like the worst jealous way, yeah.
Exactly. I did want to tell you that Karen says hello.
Oh, thank you. I was going to say hi back to Karen. Yeah. Forget you guys. I want to talk to Karen.
Yeah, back.
That's usually the sentiment we get.
Although I'm sure she's not I'm assuming. Just because of the estrogenal component, that she's not quite as much of a Zappa fan. Maybe that's an assumption that I shouldn't make, but
no, that's an okay. That's an okay assumption,
okay,
actually.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I've noticed. I mean, there's been a few Zappa fans that have been females along the way, but
ex-wives of his, yeah. Moon Unit. Yeah, there's been a few of them.
Been a few.
Yeah, yeah. Those that are actually made from his DNA.
Right.
And only of those, it's probably like you know, yeah, 60%. Right.
Now, I would also say that she doesn't listen to Zappa much, but she does appreciate.
Okay, sure.
What she's and she loves, from what I can see, from what I've shown her, she likes his interviews and stuff and his speaking style.
So. It's crazy how relevant it still is.
Oh yeah.
You know, something he says in 1988 or said in 88 or, you know, even 65 or 67, you hear him say it or you read it and you just think, oh boy, wow. Talk about, you know, prescient. My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, he said a lot of really timeless things.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And have to appreciate that. I remember.
I think one of the most important things he ever said was to his children. He said, when I come home, if I catch you watching television, you can be watching anything you want as long as there's not an 800 number across the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, very good. Cool. Cool.
That's
yeah.
always been
it's,
one of my
It's favorites. Like listening to Bill Hicks. I don't know if you're familiar with Bill Hicks.
Oh, yes.
You know, obviously. Similar thing. It's creepy because you get, you know, Bill Hicks from the grave talking about, you know, going to war in, mm-hmm. you know, in Iraq and how crazy it is. And same thing with Frank talking about, you know, conservative politicians and the religious right. And you just think, was this recorded yesterday or was this? No, it's 25 years ago.
Things
wow.
don't change.
Yeah,
in fact, you were just talking about, Brian was just talking about earlier, paranormal research has not changed one bit.
Yeah, right. Same deal.
Yeah, you drop out of it and then you go on one of these stupid little investigations with a stupid group and they're doing the exact same stupid things yep. that they were doing 20 years ago.
Yeah. The same mistakes, the same assumptions, the same. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Now, let's see here. Oh, are we changing subjects too fastly for you in the chat room there, dumbass? Sorry, George. one of the things you will find about us is we do have side conversations occasionally.
Sure.
And you're always invited.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Should I type?
Yes, I said the fucking word fastly, Rick. What's it got to do with anything? Sorry. No, by the way, just to remind you, there's no cussing on the show.
Right.
Gotcha.
So let's jump back to Tam here for a minute. You
sure.
did a phenomenal job emceeing Tam.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind. Thank you.
There should really be a best of George disc with just the intros.
Yeah. The intros. Okay, let's think about this for a second, or let's talk about this. The intros. How many of them were written on the spot, and how many of them did you have prepared?
Well, I didn't prep any. So, and I'm, you know, depends how you define on the spot. I would have, you know, whoever was on, I would have the next person. If I was lucky enough, the next speaker would show up 15 or 20 minutes beforehand. I could ask them a question or two to hopefully get the, you know, writing juices happening. You know, do you own any pets? Or, you know, I remember asking Brian Dunning, if you could own any car, what would you own? And he said, whatever, you know, Porsche something something. And I was like, okay, let me just use that. I don't know how I'm going to use it, but I'll use that. If the person wasn't there, then I would just have to go into the program or quickly go on Wiki and just find something or just be silly and maybe talk to the subject at hand or just be completely random. So, you know, I'd have 20 minutes, half hour to write a little, you know, 10 to 15 second thing. These are in no way, you know, complete songs or anything, but they're just little 15, 20 second, 30 second, you know, pieces that, I didn't pre-write anything because I didn't want to, it's almost like cheating in a weird way. I don't know what that says about me or it's like, I think it,
I don't know either,
but it takes the pressure off in a weird kind of way. Like if I know that, you know, oh, well, I just wrote it. So if it's not that good, it's, well, he just wrote it. It's okay. So so that's cheating in another direction too, I guess. But to okay. me, that was sort of the fun, and boy, it made the days just that entire weekend actually flew by because it would be, you know, sing the tune, introduce the person, come, you know, run out to the front, try to see where we are schedule wise if we're on time. I would tell the person that was, you know, delineating how much time was left on the clock to the speaker could see the countdown clock. Mm-hmm. I'd say, you know, we're 2 minutes behind, so let's go. You know, give them 27 minutes. And he'd go in 27, then I'd run back to the hallway. I'd see if there's anything going on, any messages from anybody, you know, in terms of what's happening, are people where they're supposed to be. Grab the next, you know, topic or the next speaker, write the tune, hopefully rehearse it. Maybe they'll show up. Maybe I'll amend it. And then like, you know, and then do it again. And so like 6, 10, 12 hours would just fly by, which was kind of cool and kind of weird at the same time. So it seemed to work out. I mean, for the most part, there were a couple of them were sort of Weird Al kind of covers because I thought they sort of worked here and there. Like, you know, Carrie Poppy, I ended up doing Carrie on My Wayward Son because I think I was just tired, maybe had an aneurysm, I'm not sure. But I don't think she even knew that song either, so she kind of didn't get it, which is funny. But for the most part, yeah, they were just little original, just, you know, little haikus, whatever the plural of haikus is, haiku, haikum, Hikans, whatever.
Yeah, you're talking to the wrong guys.
Yeah. Hakuna Matatas, yes.
There you go.
So, yeah, it's just silliness.
Well, it was great, though. It really was. I mean, you have to have a certain amount of confidence or a lack of caring what people think of you, I think, to be able to jump out on stage and do that.
Oh, that's its own radio program right there. Yeah. Is it the confidence or is it the sort of sheer dint of wanting to be accepted by people and be thought as being something worthwhile? It's that weird, you know, the thing like performer's dilemma where like, you know, you just, oh, like me, I'm working really hard, like me. Yeah. No, it was ultimately a lot of fun and I can't stand it but I don't like it when you go to a conference somewhere and the person that's doing the introductions, you know, or an introduction just reads like the thing that you're holding in your lap. Like, you know, everybody gets a program.
Oh, and they sorry. Can you hang on for 1 second?
Sure.
I'm so sorry. I'm getting a phone call. Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
I know that.
Good. How are you doing?
Doing absolutely great. It's good to hear your voice.
You too. Or I should say yours too.
Now, I want you to hold on for a second. Everybody that's listening, this is...
Hold on. Oh, you can't say it.
Well, I don't think George is...
He might be.
He might be.
I don't think he needs to announce...
Oh, so maybe you should... This is...
Exactly.
Everybody. So what we're going to do is... we're going to hang up on you just for a few minutes.
Awesome.
And I'm going to bring you back in, and then we'll all be together in one conversation.
That sounds good.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right. I'll be right here.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay, now I think I've completely lost. Is George there? George is on hold. George? Call on hold. How do you do this? There he is. Oh, I did it. You're still there?
I hope those were the test results.
Thank you so much for holding.
He never answers for test results.
That was a really good phone call we just got, though.
Okay.
Well, let me see here.
You know, in mentioning that phone call, I almost used the word segue a few minutes ago.
Segue, like the thing you write on?
No.
Oh, you were wanting to segue.
Because George did a beautiful, beautiful segue, but we couldn't use it.
What was the segue?
He was talking about how there's certain male fans.
Oh. Oh, and we were talking about Zappa.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And
okay.
I bit my tongue and went, okay. That's a segue.
Yeah, it would have been a good segue. Because we were going to talk about Zappa.
Segues are for kids, by the way. That's whatever. That's
and Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Zappa. When did you first sort of... discover Zappa?
Yeah, I was relatively late to the game. I have a habit of kind of discovering artists as they stop touring. I did it with King Crimson. I did it with Talking Heads. I did it with Frank. I discovered Frank in '88. It was the summer.
'88 was a million years ago.
I know. That's so funny. '88, '89. It was the summer of my senior year out of school, and I bought... my cousin had made me a mixtape. He had for years, he knew that I was into music and was interested in stuff. He was an older cousin. He's about 8 years older. So when you're, you know, when you're 14 and your older cousin is 8 years older, that's a massive, massive influence. And he had made me tapes of, Talking Heads, early Talking Heads stuff that he was the first to expose me to that and sort of said, this stuff is important. He would make me mixtapes with, the punk band Fear. You know, so I would be a 13-year-old kid singing Beef Baloney, you know, Let's Have a War, stuff like that. Really important kind of tunes. And he would always say, you gotta jump in a Zappa at some point. You gotta jump in. And I kept saying like, where? And he said, I don't know, but you need to at some point. So when Frank started the You Can't Do That on Stage Anymore series, that was the reason I bought a CD player because, I had bought The Real Frank Zappa book, which came out in '88,
right.
I bought that and sort of read that first, and didn't really know all of the references and everything, but just loved it. There was just something about it that connected me to him and got You Can't Do That on Stage Anymore, Volume 1, on cassette, because there was a sampler version on cassette. So I got that thinking that, okay, let me get this for now, and then eventually I'll buy a CD player. This is before the ubiquity of CD players, which, again, ages me and us, I'm sure. But before the ubiquity of CD players, I thought, let me get this on tape. It was like a, it was a, sort of a best of the double disc selections. Wore that tape out, and that started the journey. And that's, you know, I always recommend that to people, that when they're wanting to know where to jump in with Frank's stuff, the, you know, the six You Can't Do That on Stage Anymore volumes are really nice, because you get such a breadth of material and bands and personnel, and that whatever you tend to connect with, you can kind of go investigate that further, which is exactly what I did. So, you know, on that first tape that I had was Montana, you know, from Helsinki, the 74 band. And there was just something about that that I just immediately connected with that band. And that's since
Isn't that bizarre? It's like, for certain people, Zappa speaks a language that some of us can understand. Other people don't understand it at all.
Yeah, it was very similar to sort of seeing Monty Python for the first time. I was much younger. I was probably 12 or 13.
Oh, that's a really good connection
to
make there.
Don't.
Now, for me, it was a guitarist that brought me to Zappa. It was Steve Vai.
Okay.
And that's what got me interested. And I think my first CD, I'm going to embarrass myself in front of Brian, but my first cassette of Zappa was Frank Zappa Meets the Mothers of Prevention.
Sure.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Still got the vinyl of that.
And then Jazz 85. From Hell. And Jazz From Hell was remarkable. But did were any guitarists attractive for you in that?
Well, I wasn't really a guitarist yet. I was sort of a full-on, you know, drumming. I was going to college to study percussion, to study drums. So that was, you know, I had heard of the Black Page. And it was sort of this myth, really. Like, my band director had sort of said, like, you know, just like my cousin, you know, someday you'll get into Frank and there's the Black Page. You'll have to check out the Black Page. So it wasn't until I sort of got into college and really dove in. And my roommate was a guitarist, and he taught me a lot. He wasn't into Frank, but he was into Rush and Yes. He kind of exposed me to a lot of Yes that I hadn't really known before.
Right.
So I was never sort of guitar centric, but when you find, you know, Vinnie Colaiuta, and you realize that there's some planet that guy has come from, as well as, you know, Bozio had a connection with, because he was a singing drummer, which, you know, my dad was, which I tried to do in the bands I played in, so that he could be a phenomenal percussionist and a singer and a character too. I liked that Terry had this character about him, like when they're doing, you know, Titties and Beer or whatever, that it's almost like a cartoon voice characterization. Like I really connected with that, and he's just the mother of a player and that stuff. So I kind of jumped in through the percussion more than the guitar. You know, subsequently, you realize that, you know, Vi is just a monster. And then I became a huge fan. We spoke about this at Tama, of Mike Keneally, you know, the 88 stunt guitarist who,
right.
Keneally, to me, was just, that's that fantasy of, you know, being discovered by Frank, you know, calling, doing a cold call into, I know we're getting into real, you know.
Well, wait a minute. With Mike Keneally, do you know much about his story of getting the call and going in?
Oh,
and...
yeah. No, that whole, I mean, I've heard him tell it a couple of times. I mean, I've read the transcript of him telling it. Plus, I've heard him tell that story live. And it's just.
Oh, well, hang on just one second.
Yeah.
Just one second.
Hey,
how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Now it's funny because George can't be added to this conversation due to his or her privacy settings.
Oh, you've got to be kidding!
George, this is absolutely fascinating.
George.
So I'm going to yell at George to change his privacy settings for 5 minutes. And then we'll call you right back, because I just popped up when I tried to add you. Are you just loving this?
I'm just surfing the web. I'm hanging out.
This is absolutely live. Mm-hmm. I gotta love it. Okay, we'll call you right back.
See you. Bye.
All right, where are we at, George? Mm-hmm.
Hello.
George.
Yes.
You know, I was going to add in another Zappa expert on this conversation, but you have privacy settings that don't allow that.
Oh, okay. How do I not do that?
I have no idea.
How do you go into the privacy settings?
Preferences?
I don't know. This is good live radio, finding out this kind of stuff. So I'm popping into the...
Really? So what, I can't have... I've done multiple things.
So, okay. Let's do this.
Oh, wait.
Are you on a Mac?
Allow anyone. Yes, I'm on a Mac.
Okay. I think you're good. You know where to go then.
Yeah. Allow anyone. Allow chats from anyone. Receive calls from anyone. Show my picture to anyone. Should I enable bonjour? What the hell's that?
let's pop over to calls here.
Oh, chats? Do I need to do it? No. Am I not working? Is it working? No?
Well, I don't know. Well, let's find out. I'll try to add someone to this conversation. You know, if all of us fails,
yes,
maybe I'll add you to the conversation with him. We'll see
if
that works.
All right.
We'll find out.
All right.
I just thought this would be kind of fun to...
I know I've done multi-chat kind of things, so it's possible.
All right, knocked him out again. So, I'm going to go the other direction.
He's like, I've had it. I'm not picking up that phone anymore.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
Live again. Yeah.
Well, I think I know what the problem is.
All right.
What?
Yeah, George never accepted my Skype invitation.
Some friend.
That's
yeah,
it.
Exactly. So let's see. I'm going to try one more time. So if he would just do that, it would solve the problems. But this is live radio. That's what this
we'll
makes it so
him.
Much fun. What?
Does he just even know he's supposed to be on the radio right now?
What's that?
Does he know he's supposed to be on the radio right now?
Oh, yeah. We've been chatting.
Okay.
He's just, it hangs up on him every time I bring you in.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So hang on 1 second here. Yeah. And it's still you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I'm going to hang up again and be right back.
All right. Good luck.
This is magic.
It
live
is.
Live magic,
is.
Right?
Well,
here.
I am glad that we now know what the problem is.
Hello?
Okay, we know what the problem is.
Yes.
You never accepted me as a buddy.
Oh, so you should be in the... Did you send me a thing?
I did.
There's a buzzer buzzer. Where's it?
Yeah, in fact, it says, George, pending.
Well, speaking of music, I'll go outside the box here. Did you see that Kiss Destroyer has just been remixed and re-released?
Oh, really?
Yeah, with added solos.
With added...
And the original cover art.
How can you tell?
A sloppily plays differently a little bit.
Plays something a little more drunkenly.
Sorry. Okay, you should be added. Boy, this is exciting radio, let me tell you.
I know, but you know, it's informative, educational, and exciting.
Yes.
You forgot domestic.
Okay. I just think I said okay to you being my buddy. So now can I borrow some money?
Let's find out.
All right.
Ooh, now that's magic.
I think we're getting somewhere.
Hello?
Yay.
Oh, it's so good to have you on.
Why, thank you.
George, say hi.
This isn't who I think it is it?
I don't know. Who do you think
it
is? This is your life.
Is this Mike?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness, Michael. Hello.
Good. How you doing?
Jesus Christ. Now I'm going to be all freaked out. You know, whenever we've met in person a couple times, you probably don't remember me. And
yeah, of
I'm
course
always,
I remember you.
I'm a complete twat in front of you, and I apologize. I'm so sorry. This is actually good that
that's
I can just, right. I can sort of just say, like, I'm just a complete twat. Years ago, I need to apologize because you played in New York City. Gosh, I was thinking about 97 or something. Frank Briggs was playing drums.
Oh, well, 96, yeah.
96, okay. Frank was playing drums. And Frank, you know, last minute sub, he came in and he was reading charts. And I was sitting right in front. It was at that club, the Bitter End, Bottom Line, whatever it was. And
Bottom Line,
okay. And Frank, like, you know, he like, you nodded and he missed a cue. Like, big fucking deal. Big fucking deal. And asshole, eager, you know, Mike Keneally fan, George Robb, is sitting right in the fucking front. And I said, Frank's asleep. And like,
oh, no.
You looked at me, and you said, that's probably the same asshole that was bitching about the Dickie Such an Asshole riff, you know, back in Germany. And like, I've wanted to apologize about that for nigh, whatever this is, almost, what, 17 years? So I apologize to you and the Briggs family and his progeny and his children. And I was just a complete twat. And even I saw you, whatever, like 3 weeks ago, and I like couldn't remember the fact that your new album is called Wing Beat Fantastic. I had to say, yeah, I'm excited about the new record you have made in plastic case, which will be.
First of all, I forgive you for the bottom line transgression. I will I'll be contacting Frank Briggs and all of his relatives, and I'll get back to you with their acceptances of your apology.
Okay.
And the second thing, I agree, is harder to forgive you for because everyone else in the world knows the name of my new album.
That's true.
And Baxter. We bring people together.
Exactly.
Yeah, you guys can log off actually because no, what a treat. Wow.
No, anyway, no worries, George.
I appreciate that very much, Mike. Yeah. Thank you very much. The new record's great, man.
Oh, thank you.
I'm digging it so much, and the response is it's so nice to see a nice response to nice music. It's like yay.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, obviously I'm joking about everybody knowing the name of my new album because most people don't even know who I am, much less the fact that I have a new album out. But I am too grateful that people are receiving this album so wonderfully. It's extremely gratifying. So, and I'm really happy to hear that you like it as well. So thank you.
Very much so. Very much so. It's the songwriting is one on its own in terms of you can tell that these songs are interesting, that they've, you know, that they've been written in a shed. You can sort of tell that.
they have that shed feel, you can hear the wall, that's right.
The kind of that garden weasel quality that we all shoot for in our songwriting. but then on top of it, just in terms of your, you know, the orchestration that you're always kind of putting into it, which is always so, I don't know, it's just so keneally. So it's just awesome. I'm not gonna fawn too much, but my goodness, it's just great.
Oh well, you know, it's made for ears like yours. So I'm grateful to know that it's hitting them properly. So
yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
How's it going with you? What's going on?
I'm plugging away. You know, forget about me. My goodness. No, it's
you ran right from, you just came into Nearfest for a second to say hi, and then you had a gig, right?
Yeah, I had a wedding. I had this one of these weddings that's like literally on a horse farm.
Oh.
Like it was a 60-year-old couple. Like they were, you know, divorced 5 times and their kids were 30 and whatever. And they met, you know, in Stade or something. I don't even know. And they were having this beautiful outdoor wedding.
Were they on horseback?
I don't know. I didn't see the actual ceremony. I can only hope.
Okay.
There was a lasso was involved somehow. But yeah, so I had to fly up to there. And of course, you know, it's like I run back because I spoke with you briefly and I saw Roger Dean, who was signing stuff in the art room. You know, he was there and I just sort of saw him and just said, oh, thanks for painting good. You know, again, you know, it's like I'm just a twat when it comes to being in person. But I go back to the band, of course, you know, Funk Authority, which is a 9-piece, you know, horn band doing 70s soul music. It's a really fun gig. It's really, really great. And in that band, like 2/9 of it know who I'm talking about. So I'm like floating because I just saw Mike and I saw Roger Dean and I'm like, oh, I just, and like the guitarist is like, oh, cool. And everybody else is who? You know, so that's fine. That's just the way it goes. It's like, you know, you experience some kind of a nerd. And while you're experiencing, you sort of think to yourself, like, wow, there's no one I know that will appreciate this.
That makes it more special to me.
I guess. I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. It's, yeah. You know, I got to hang out with, you know, I had dinner with James Randi. Like, who? Okay. Never mind. Did you see that episode of The Hills? That was really good. Yeah. Or whatever. You know. So, yeah. Plugging away. Right, that band.
You two, stop it. Stop.
Sorry.
I mean, I think Brian and I have actually discovered how we need to do our shows from now on.
Yeah, no kidding.
This is fantastic.
This works out really well for us.
Did not speak?
Yeah, just sit back and let you, you know, two guys that can communicate well, just do it.
I got to ask Mike.
Along those lines, yes.
Was there a point in the shed writing these tunes that, like, your 15-year-old self, like, sort of just started screaming? Or is it kind of it's a slow enough process that you kind of can you go with it?
Well, I guess I was 22 when I figured out that XTC was somebody that I needed to be astonished by. So maybe if anyone was going to scream, it would have been him. But
okay.
I don't know. I think I was much. I was trying to be. Andy himself is so unmoved and unimpressed by the hero worship of his fans that it really wasn't that much of a hardship for me to totally compartmentalize and set aside that part of my head. It was really about not wasting his time. and pretty much every aspect of our working relationship was more than anything me trying not to waste Andy's time. The result of that was that it was really productive, you know, and that even went down to, you know, the whole production process. Once we had written the songs and I was back on my own in California doing the recording, you know, at all times I was kind of making the album for an audience of one, which was Andy. I wanted him to feel when all was said and done that it was a total of 2 weeks that we spent, you know, just knee to knee in his shed or sitting around his kitchen table working on lyrics and stuff. And you know, it's asking a lot to say, okay, let's write these songs together and ultimately, hopefully it'll be something that you can stand behind as a part of your body of work. And so I worked really, really hard on the record. I wanted it to be something that he could be, you know, truly happy about. And fortunately, you know,
for anybody that's wondering, Mike is talking about Andy Partridge from the Partridge Family, if I'm not mistaken. But you've worked for him, you've worked with him before, and he's had some really great things to say about you, Mike.
Well, the closest I've come to really working with him before is when I was, they invited me and Scott Tunis, to the recording sessions for an album they did in 1988 called Oranges and Lemons, which is an album I love. And I played guitar on one track during those sessions. It's the one song from the sessions that's not actually on the album and has never come out.
I was going to say, like, where are you on there? Oh, okay. That never came out. Jeez.
No, yeah, exactly. I'm a name in the liner notes, thanked, but I didn't actually play anything on the record. So that's where I am on that album. But apart from that, my relationship with Andy has been purely just, you know, friendship. And with Dave Gregory from XTC, we've done gigs together and stuff, but never really connected professionally on any level or, you know, artistically in any significant way with Andy. So this is after, you know, over two decades of knowing him. This is the first time that we actually attempted to do something together. And, you know, it was, in a way, it's funny that it took so long, but in another way, I'm grateful that we waited until it was something that turned out as well as it did, you know.
Mike, you said that as you're writing it, you're sort of, as you're producing it, you're doing it sort of to satisfy him and to make him happy. How normally that role is that, like, are you making it for yourself to make yourself happy, or are you approaching it from some sort of idealized fan that you're writing or producing a record for?
Yeah, you mean in normal non Andy Partridge circumstances?
Yes, non XTC related circumstances. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I ultimately and initially, you have to please your own ears first of all. So that's the first filter that you've got to get through. And at that point, I think I'm usually feeling pretty satisfied that if I think it's okay, that the people who listen to my records are also going to think it's okay. At this point in the game, you know, I would be delighted, and I'm always trying with each album to reach new listeners, and with this album, it seems to be working, which is great. But I never really consciously, anyway, earlier on in my career, I think I was more consciously trying to contrive types of songs and textures and stuff like that I thought might appeal to a certain market segment or something like that. But I got over that in a hurry once I started to realize that the stuff that was being received most warmly was the stuff that was most true to myself. Whatever I thought sounded the best tended to be what other people really connected with as well.
Is that around?
So
before that, you think?
Say again. Sorry.
Is that like around Sluggo, or even before, where you sort of, or even earlier than that, in terms of like where you sort of start finding your voice?
I would think, and I'm obviously really happy with all the earlier albums. And I've been listening to Sluggo a lot lately because we've been working on the on the read too for that. But the first album where I really had no attempts to contrive a specific kind of music was Knockertop. And
oh really? Okay. Wow.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
And that album probably threw some people for a loop. But what I was happy to find is that other people seem to connect with that album on a really, really, sort of subconscious, almost like dream zone level, where it touched something in the back of people's the brain that was deeper than the previous stuff. And that album was me in complete self-indulgent mode. And I thought, well, if I can get away with that.
Well, you played everything on that album, right?
Yeah, exactly. And with a certain amount of self-consciousness, because I'm not a trained drummer or anything, and so whenever I get on a drum kit, there's always a part of me that's kind of going, "Well, this is pretty funny that I'm doing this with all the drummers I know."
Hey, just so you know, George is another drummer.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. You don't know enough drummers, Mike, I'm sure. Yeah.
I just knew that with that particular album, I really wanted it to be as individual, as personal a statement as I could, and right, doing it all myself was the only way I could get there. It's funny, when I remember when I gave a copy of that album to Steve Vai, and he listened to it, and his initial response to me, and I don't think he knew that I was playing everything, his initial response, the first thing he said was, "Drumming's kind of all over the place, isn't it?" And I said, "Yeah, I guess you could say that, sure." And he kind of went, "Hmm." And then like 2 weeks later, he got back in touch and said, "You know what? I've been listening to this album more and more, and I can't imagine the drumming being any other way. Forget what I said." It's there. You just kind of have to jump in with both feet when you're taking on something like that. And fortunately, I think that I've managed to drumming to a point where it doesn't just sound inept, but that's also the magic of Pro Tools as well. But I've been listening to the stuff on Sluggo, like Cardboard Dog and stuff, and I think, oh, it's not that the songs that I played drums on that record. It's right. Not embarrassing.
I love Cardboard Dog.
It's that's been fun digging our hands back into these songs. We're putting out a very deluxe reissue that's going to contain the original mix, because I always get a little miffed when people do revisionist history with their albums and make a particular mix that people are used to unavailable. I think that's wrong. We're doing a new stereo mix and a new surround mix. So we'll include those in addition to the original mix and a bunch of video material and other tracks that were recorded around the same time and stuff. It'll be a nice package.
The Greedo shot first mix. That's always the worst one.
Well, I don't know if you ever heard a song called Bob Dylan's Nose we put on a videotape called Soap Scum Remover.
Yeah.
that's kind of a chaotic version of the song, but I found a studio run through of that song. Instrumental.
Cool.
It's instrumental except for the opening little passage. But it's played much more accurately and crisply than the live take on that video. So that'll be nice to have a good sounding actual stereo mix of that song, as opposed to, the camera audio mono microphone.
Exactly. Now, Mike, are you planning on doing any more projects with any other Andes, like an Andy West or anything like that?
Oh, well, I haven't spoken to Andy West in a while, but I enjoyed the stuff that I did with him in the past. I'd be delighted to do more things with him. I had a project earmarked with Andy Griffith, but that's off the charts now.
Oh, yeah.
Working
on your whistle for that one?
I guess I have to. And No other Andy's. You have any other Andy's specifically in mind?
Well, I was thinking Andy West, because he's not too far from here, and I can go tell him, hey, you know, mic's open. If
that's true.
That whole thing with and of course Banachek calls me right now. Oh, jeez.
George.
But no, I was going to ask you about Lamb of God. Do you have any updates?
Oh well, he's out. Randy is out.
Right.
He's been released, and that's wonderful.
What does that mean to you?
Death Clock is definitely going back out on the road. We'll be out in starting the very end of October through about the second week of December. I don't know if awesome. Lamb of God is on the bill with us or not. I think maybe we've learned our lesson about that, and we might not do any more co-headlining tours.
right.
Because it's kind of rough being being tethered to the fate of another band and just watching helplessly as something crazy goes down like that. I know Lamb of God also plans to tour later in the year, because I have to freaking make back that bail money somehow.
Well, it sounds like he's actually got the possibility of having to go back and face the charges.
Well, he definitely has to. I mean, the reason why that prosecutor was so reluctant to let him out is because he thought he was a flight risk. But I don't doubt Randy for a second when he says that he absolutely wants to go back and face the charges. He has no intention of what is he going to turn into the Roman Polanski of metal and just be on the run from the law for the rest of his life? I don't think that's in the cards. He's so justifiably convinced of his innocence that I think he very much wants to go back and clear his name.
That would be good.
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to seeing you come back through town. In fact, tomorrow night, Brian and I are going to see a band that should totally open for Death Clock when they come through Denver.
That's true.
It's called Extreme Turbo Smash, and these guys dress up like furries. And the lead singer's a panda, and the guitarist is a bunny, and they got a moose, and they got a penguin.
Yep.
And they are hysterical. They play this death metal so badly because they can't see anything, and they fall off the stage, and it's beautiful. It's a great show. So I'm just letting you know.
Wow.
When you come through Denver, put Extreme Turbo Smash as your opening show.
That sounds delightful.
They are great. But, we were starting to talk before we brought you in about the story of you joining Frank's band. And the funny thing is one of my first, because I was a late bloomer, one of my first cassettes was Jazz from Hell. And love, love, love What's New in Baltimore. And wasn't that one of the songs that you were kind of forced to learn in one night?
Yes. When he told me on the phone what I should have ready for the audition, it was What's New in Baltimore and Sinister Footwear 2. And I had actually, thank goodness, when the Zappa Band played on MTV Live on Halloween in 1981, they had I didn't have MTV at that point, but it was simulcast on FM radio, and I recorded it off the radio, and they had this song that was completely an instrumental that was very unfamiliar to me, except for the one passage that also appears in the song Wild Love. So I remember writing Wild Love 2 on my little cassette insert thing, and that was the way I identified the song. Later on, somehow, I subsequently found out that it was called Sinister Footwear 2. And it's a crazy, crazy melody, but because I had it on cassette, I had decided that I really wanted to learn it. So I, at one point, taught myself how to play that song. But that was I probably hadn't played it in 5 years at the point that Frank told me that I needed to audition with it, and I had never played What's New in Baltimore. So in one evening I had to refresh myself on Sinister Footwear 2, which is enough of a task, and attempt to learn What's New in Baltimore from scratch. And I didn't have either of them perfect for them, but I had them well enough in hand that I got across the point I was trying to get across, which was you can make me learn some crazy shit and I'll have it ready for you. I'll start to have it ready for you in a short period of time.
Wow.
That's so awesome. So awesome. George.
I had to play Wind Beneath My Wings last week for a while.
See?
And I learned that in one night, well, two nights. Well, it was like three nights of work, but like the fourth night was just more of a review. But by the end of the week, I really had about 80% of that song right. So
that's great,
so
man.
There you go.
Kudos. Nice work. Kudos to you.
You know,
80% of that song's never
George, been do you have any idea what your chances are of being MC at TAM next year?
I mean, pretty I guess good? They're pretty good, yeah.
Okay. Cause Mike, we need to invite you if you're, you know, cause we know you're never doing anything. we need to invite you to come to TAM next year cause you need to witness George's majesty he's in his real element, well, which is making shit up.
Explain TAM to, yeah, Mike, yeah. TAM is the amazing meeting, James Randi, I mentioned before, who runs the James Randi Educational Foundation. It's a meeting they have in Vegas. It's about 1,200 to 1,500 people, and it sort of deals with skepticism and science.
We talk about shit that doesn't exist.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I was lucky enough they asked me to be the MC for this thing sort of 2 years in a row, and I did it last year for the first time and then did it this year. And I just wanted to do something different for the introductions because normally when you're at a conference, the person that's doing the MCing just reads, like, out of the pamphlet the thing that every – person is holding in their hands, they'll just read that and they introduce the person. And to me, that's very boring. So I decided to kind of, as each speaker was talking, like the next speaker, I would write a song for an introduction. So a little like, you know, Jonathan Colton type, you know, 30-second little custom song. So that's what Baxter's referring to. But
gotcha.
Yeah, the conference is actually great. It's really amazing in terms of, I know everybody gets stuck using the word amazing, but it really is. It's some really neat lectures and talks about, you know, how your brain actually works and how medicine and science is misrepresented in the media and how to be skeptical about all kinds of things. And it's a wonderful time.
Frank would have loved it.
Oh yeah.
You're right.
Like he totally
okay. Here, I can give you the tagline. This probably help. The Amazing Meeting is an annual celebration of science skepticism and critical thinking. People from all over the world come to TAM each year, sharing and learning, laughing, and the skeptical perspective with their fellow skeptics and a host of distinguished guest speakers and panelists.
On a sesame seed bun. So it's perfect.
Yes, exactly.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. This year, George Carlin's daughter did her show. She has a whole show about her dad and like growing up with as a Carlin.
Oh, that's
that was really that was cool. Great. Yeah, a little different, but really, really cool. So yeah, they're always trying new stuff. So yes, you should come if you're free because you have so much time.
It's a lot of fun. It really is.
Where and when?
It's in the middle of July in Vegas.
In the middle of Vegas.
Yeah, so it's a brilliant timing.
That's in a lovely location.
Yes. So it's nice and friggin' hot.
Uh-huh. It's like being on the sun.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's pretty right smack dab in the middle of July. It's just, what is that, south of Vegas, in South Point, or South Point Casino. Penn Jillette of, Penn and Teller, has a band.
He's using his quotey fingers there.
Yeah, he has a
And he band. Plays the bass.
Gotcha.
Hey, he's a really, really good magician.
Exactly. He is. He's a great magician. Watching him on stage playing music is really a novelty.
I know he's a Residence fan, so you can always give it validity on the performance art basis.
Yes, and that's exactly it. That's exactly it. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, and he was a lot of fun as well. Tam's a good time, and I think you would have a great time there.
That's creepy. I was just watching a video with Mike in it, and he was wearing a Residence T-shirt, and it made me go back and rewatch all of their old videos.
See, this proves that mysticism is real.
That's right. All right. Wow, that cancel Tam. Tam's off. Cancel it.
Yep.
That's yep. We're done.
We've got wrap it up. Show as proof. I really want to thank you two. I want to give you both a chance to tell us about what is big that's coming up that you want to plug real quick. So, George, go for it.
The next big thing coming up is we're going to have the DVD release of the Ice House concert that we did back in February, the 21812 show that we did, which is the full Geologic Orchestra where the footage is great. The audio sounds great. We're cutting it together. That should be, you know, by the end of the year, we'll have a lovely DVD, which will have not just the concert, but a documentary about the whole weekend, commentary, an MP3 of the whole concert, all kinds of bonus hoo-ha. So that's the next big thing. Then there's a Dragon Con, of course, is coming up. at the end of the month, which is always fun in Atlanta. I'm doing a live show there, a couple panel shows and things like that. So, and then the podcast every week, as always, geologicpodcast.com.
Awesome. Mike, go for it.
Well, suddenly with all this unexpected time on my hands with the cancellation of the Death Clock Tour, we decided we would attempt to see if it was possible to get some kind of alternate tour mounted to promote the new album, Wing Beat Fantastic. And we contacted Julie and Rodney Cord at Blue Mouth Promotions, and they really did an insanely quick turnaround and got us a 10 or 11 date tour booked on the East Coast, the Midwest, Mid-South area throughout most of September. But it's just going to be me and Rick Musalem performing as a duo, and we'll be trading instruments around and playing a bunch of stuff from the new record and a bunch
of. It's going to be just the two of you?
It's just me and Rick Musalem.
Oh, that's going to be a fun show.
Yeah, it's going to be, because, you know, me and Brian Beller have done a lot of these duet tours, like for Taylor Guitars and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like the immediacy and the intimacy and the musical communication when it's just two people. And when Rick and I just sit around playing, it's great fun, but I've never done a tour just the two of us. So, you know, a lot of the stuff is going to be the two of us on guitar, but I'll have a keyboard and he's going to be playing some bass. And I put together a song list that goes deep into my back catalog, and I tried to find a bunch of songs that I hardly ever play or maybe have never played live. So it's going to be an unusual assortment of my stuff and a good selection of tunes from the new record. And that's going to be throughout, as I say, most of September. And if people want to check out those dates, they can go to keneally.com or they can go to my Facebook page, and all the stuff is there. And then I'm going to be working on a soundtrack, a feature film soundtrack with Bear McCreary, who wrote the music to Battlestar Galactica and writes the music to Walking Dead, and he's just gotten a commission to do a feature film. I'm not sure what it's about, but he says he wants the guitars to be very heavily symphonic in nature, and you know, he's very enthralled by Brian May and stuff. So I think there's going to be a lot of harmonized guitar stuff going on there. And then
very cool.
And then South America with Satriani for a couple of weeks, and then Death Clock for at the end of the year. So I'm pretty slammed for most of the rest of the year.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Now, with your tour with Rick, are you going to be playing any songs at double speed while getting sprayed with water?
Well, I'm glad you reminded me of that. That's actually a really good idea. So
all of them. I think
I'll have to talk with the production team and get that going.
Excellent. You know, I'm really excited about this show. It was so cool to have both of you on.
Yeah, we didn't have to work. It was kind of nice.
I know. Yeah, we didn't have to do a damn thing. But we're big fans of both of you guys.
Absolutely.
So this was a real treat for us.
Thank you, guys. That's very sweet. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, and it's good talking to you, George.
Yeah, likewise, Mike. Good luck, man. And please just keep doing what you're doing, because it's just, it makes us very happy.
I appreciate that, and trust me, I don't have a choice. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I hear you.
Excellent. Well, you guys have a great night, and I'll probably talk to both of you individually soon.
Very good. Lovely. Thank you, Matt. Thanks, Brian.
We'll talk to you later.
See you guys. Safe tour. Bye.
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 That was a first.
It was.
That was a lot of fun. I could always call Banachek back on here and see what he wanted, but he probably doesn't want to broadcast it.
Yeah, probably not.
So. Very cool.
Poor George.
And Sheldon, I care. I care that you're here. You missed a very interesting show, but I'm glad that you made it here at the end. And I'm sure Karen says hi. She's upstairs. So anyway, I think we should get out of here.
Yeah.
It's been a long one. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. And we will talk to you again next week.
Somebody told me that you were so stupid, but I didn't believe them. But now I believe them. Somebody told me that you were so stupid. Everybody's stupid.